Hey expats, Todd Blackhurst here with Taichung Expat Talks, and tonight, well, whenever you're listening to this, I guess it doesn't matter, I'm with my friend Wade Cardall, and Wade and I have known each other for the past almost 5 years since I moved to Taiwan. Wade, how long have you been in Taiwan?
I've been in Taiwan for 7 years
now. 7 years, okay, so a little bit longer than I have, and we've been acquainted through the info exchange, first of all, but also just through our running around town and kind of bumping into each other at some events. So I'm really happy to have this opportunity to actually sit down and get to know you personally. So first of all, why don't you just introduce yourself to the audience and then we'll jump in.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've been living in Taiwan for 7 years now, all of it in Taichung City, all of it teaching, first at cram schools, now at a private junior high school. While I've been here, I've started a few different organizations that are of my, along my own interests, like the Taichung Skeptics in the Pub and the Taichung's Atheist, Humanist, and Freethinking groups. And I've had some success with those, and really, in general, Taiwan has kind of captured my heart, so I've stuck around.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, you and I sitting down and talking to each other, because obviously a lot of people know I'm particularly religious, Christian, and you're particularly free thinking. And so, but one of the things that has defined our friendship, at least from afar, is our ability to communicate well and get along. And so I'm looking forward to just getting to know you better and understanding you more. And I feel like that's always been your intention with me also, and I really appreciate that about you, so thanks.
Well, you know, it is to our credit, I think the ability right now to have polite conversations between people who disagree is a skill that is slowly receding from the public. Fewer and fewer people seem to be able to engage like that, and yes, I've also appreciated our conversations. You know, I think you say we've always been cordial. I think at times, you know, you have maybe pointed out to me when you thought I was being rude or maybe swinging down with my arguments, and that has always been helpful to me, right? I want to make sure that if I'm being open, if I'm engaging with an idea, that I'm actually engaging in a way that will help people understand, will help people at least see where I'm coming from without seeing or feeling attacked.
Well, I actually don't remember any of those times, so that's maybe a good thing. Anyway, I like you, and it's so great that we get to have this opportunity to sit down.
You were the utmost of cordially, a kick and a kiss.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Hey, so let's talk a little bit about that. You have been a catalyst for bringing together people who are irreligious. Is it fair to use that word, irreligious?
Yeah, sure, that's a fair term.
So tell us a little bit about some of that group and the things that you've been able to put together and what that looks like here in Taichung in Taiwan.
Right. It started out, pretty simple. Just this was my interest, and I got someone to help design a logo, and we started the Facebook group, and we started talking. And from there, we started to do the Ask an Atheist booths. Maybe you've seen me manning them. I'm sure a bunch of people have seen them, or maybe even come over to say hi, hello, or trade barbs, or even just troll me a little bit.
Yeah.
But springing off of that, I got to work with an international organization called the International Humanist and Ethical Union, specifically with their youth organization. And through that, we were able to bring the first humanist conference in East Asia, in East Asia, here to Taiwan, up in Taipei.
Yeah.
And from that, I met a great group of Taiwanese people who also have similar interests. Their interest in the encroachment of religion in the government sphere. I guess you'd call it separation of temple and government here. And now they are one of the first organized Pasifarian groups, which is the guys who worship the flying spaghetti monster.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a paperwork thing. They needed some kind of religious trappings to get religious.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah, to be recognized by the government. They needed that. Okay. But now they're doing their own booth mannings. They're going out to different conferences and other events like the Taichung International Food Festival to promote their current movement.
Yeah. So I am curious, when you set up the booths at some of the events that we have here in Taichung, ask an atheist, what would be some of the questions, the legitimate questions maybe that people would come up and talk to you about?
Well, really, they would come in all forms. I did have people inviting me to their church.
The church service.
The church service.
I never did that, to be honest.
Thank you.
Although, I will invite you tonight, but I not that I expect you to accept the invitation, but you are always welcome.
You've invited me before, and thank you. It does seem like you have a welcoming bunch over there, and that's great. I specifically remember a long conversation with a Taiwanese man. So it wasn't about, a traditional Western religion. He wanted to talk to me about the yin and the yang.
Oh, yeah.
And how our understanding of the yin and the yang is limited. And I think his point being, how can you deny religion? How can you be a skeptic? How can you be an atheist when we have a limited understanding? And it's not a bad question. My response is, for the things I don't understand, I leave them as a question mark. Mm. I don't say they can never be true. I'm just saying I don't have enough information now to say that they are true. And until I know that they are true, I can't act in such a way that I believe that they are.
Right. Okay. I think that's reasonable. I appreciate you saying that. I think a lot of our listeners are curious as to what you actually feel. Like, how would you express yourself? And especially for a person like myself, coming from a very spiritual or religious background, I think there are a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings. And so, how would you say to someone like me who's truly curious, because I think sometimes we bump into people who maybe are atheist or agnostic, who are maybe of the more virulent kind, hostile kind, and we don't know how to have a conversation and it ends up poorly. So here we have a chance to actually sit down and talk, and that's a good thing. So take a few moments and just express what it is that would be your kind of core principles that you live by.
There's just so many ways I can go with that question. I think it is an issue where people can be bomb throwers. I have a background in communications. I was in public relations, and there is an idea that there is room for every voice. Right, you need the bridge builders, but you also need the bomb throwers. At the same time, I feel like in the atheist movement, the skeptics movement, there has been this pervasive sort of ownage culture. Like you can go on YouTube and see a Christopher Hitchens pones religious preacher, or Sam Harris smacks down all rabbi, and I've watched enough videos and I'm familiar enough with arguments and speaking with people to realize that those arguments don't change people's minds as much as we would like to think. Mm. But placing this undue aplomb upon ownage, upon poning people, smacking down their arguments, or just saying, well, your argument wasn't worth taking seriously, but now we've handled it mightily, just seemed like it was breeding contempt, misunderstanding, as you say. So at the heart of my passion for promoting human rights, promoting separation of church and state, promoting the rights of women, is a compassion for people.
Yeah.
Right. Some people say, why are you atheists so angry? And it's not because there's anything wrong with us. It's because there's something right with us. We have empathy.
Hmm.
At least I hope we do.
Yeah, sure.
I hope that the anger that I see coming from people comes from a place of, I don't like seeing hurt being done.
Hmm.
I know I don't like being hurt. I can only imagine you don't like being hurt either. So that's the core of my humanism, is that we're both humans. I understand what I like. I think what you like is probably roughly similar. And where we disagree, we have to work together, right? There are lots of problems in the world. And I think humanity has a great responsibility and capability and responsibility to deal with these issues. So that's where my humanism guides my passion and my atheist activism and my skeptical activism.
Yeah. Good. Well, I appreciate your sharing that. And let's move on to something a little more light.
How yeah, about? Sure.
Yeah. So you've been in Taiwan 7 years. You're married to a lovely Taiwanese lady. You've just had, not just had, but recently you've fathered your first child. What's it like being a new dad?
You know, being a new dad is great. It really is. It forces you to prioritize your life. You know, your money, where you spend your money, how you spend your time, how much affection you share with your wife. It all changes when you have a kid, and that kid has his own schedule, and you know, and you have to build around that, and maybe that takes away from other things, and but at the same time, on the one hand it feels like a long time, at the other hand it feels like a short time. You know, just it feels like only yesterday she was just a lump, couldn't do anything except for cry and poop, and now she's, you know, making funny noises, she's smiling, she can focus on pictures for a long time. And yeah, you know, sometimes you put your hand there and she grabs your finger and your heart just breaks. You just say, oh, I'm gonna turn around, you're gonna be 18. But I highly suggest it.
Yeah, parenting would be awesome. It definitely has its challenge, and I'm sure people in my position say this to you all the time, but man, just enjoy these moments. They're so valuable. So that's good. What about being here in Taiwan and being away from your family? What's that like? You come from Minnesota, as you've told me. How's your family doing being this far away from their grandchildren or grandchild at this point?
It's a definitely an adjustment for them. They're getting up there in your retirement age, so they're looking forward to being grandparents, to grandparenting. They were going to come recently. There was a last-minute change of plans, but I know we'll get to see them soon. I think, you know, looking at the way Westerners raise young men, they raise men to be independent.
Sure.
And at some point, they're surprised or almost regretful when the young men turn out to be independent.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
I know I've talked to my mom before about college, and I said, oh, Mom, I used to, you know, I emailed you every month, you know, once a month. And she said, wait, when did you email me once a month? So it's always been, I think, a long time, a long time coming, where I've slowly been, you know, living my own life more and more. And I, you know, now that I do have a kid, it's changing my perspective about how much I need to, really do need to check in with them and you know, gain from their wisdom and include them more in the life of my family.
Yeah.
Independence is great, but at the same time, you know, when I like you said, I grew up in Minnesota, a small town, 5,000 people.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I say I knew most people by name. I even knew some people by their cars.
Oh.
That's how small of a town it was.
Uh-huh.
And while people love the city and I love the city, I think once you get here, you spend your time trying to make the city smaller. Mm. And that's, you do that through communities, through your church group, your
right.
your Facebook groups, your I'm a member of Toastmasters, maybe you join AmCham. Yeah. So I do have this sort of psychic longing for that closeness of a small town, and yeah, I do miss having the closeness of my family.
Yeah. How has living in Asia, living in Taiwan specifically, do you think changed you? I mean, you know, we've talked about being a parent a little bit. You're married now to an Asian, and you know, I mean, different cultures. It's just a cultural difference. I mean, you can be married to anybody, but how do you think it's changed you?
Yeah, Taiwan society or business, and I can only speak for the two schools I've worked at, but they do seem to be what I call box-making factories. Hmm. And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter what the inputs are. You know, on the one side of the equation, put whatever you want in. But on the other side of the equation, we're making boxes. So to make sure those boxes get made, things will be done a certain way. Mm. Right? Part maybe things will be overlooked. Things will be dropped. People will be asked to do things a certain way or to be patient with something or to put up with something so that the boxes can get made, you know, so the test scores can be high, so that the homework gets written, so that the feedback books are signed, whether or not there's actually any decent feedback written in them. So in some ways I've had to be more patient. Mm-hmm. I can't worry so much about things and how they're done.
Right.
And I've had to choose which battles I think are important. You know, I think I'm a complainer by nature. You know? But you know, some things are just never going to change, and you just have to have the wisdom or the grace, to borrow a phrase, to live with it. And at some point, you also have to say, well, maybe it's not wrong. Maybe it's just different. And maybe I'm the one who needs to bend a little bit. But I've also come to appreciate, find things to appreciate in everything. Like I was mentioning on the bus, no seats on the bus, or there's just one or two seats. I'm standing there. A woman says, "How are you?" She's offering me her seat. She doesn't know how to say "sit down." She knows "how are you," and that's great. You know, it's a human connection. Or you teach kids and you have them write something, and they write an interesting story about a vacation or about something they wanted to do. My current writing project is about a vacation, and one lady said, "Oh, I haven't been on any good vacations." So I was like, "Okay, great, write your dream vacation." And she wrote a little romantic tryst. And I said, that's great. I called over one other student who I know likes to read young adult romance novels. And I read it to her. I said, "Okay, Joy, would you buy that book?" And she said, yeah, you should write this. You can write this in Chinese, make it longer. And you just learn about the complicated, interesting internal lives of your students. Or do you enjoy the small things around your neighborhood? Or you just find things that make your life more interesting, because there is beauty everywhere, and you have to find it, you know, while those boxes are getting made.
That's a great metaphor. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I agree with it. What are some of the things you do teach? You teach young people, as you told me earlier, first grade through fifth grade, so you get to see a pretty broad spectrum. What are some of the things that you see in the young people here? You would just, you could say something to their parents. What would you wish you could say to their parents?
Well, to reference one of your previous guests, there are different kinds of intelligence. And I think that trying to force kids onto one single tract doesn't serve anyone well. I have some students where I just think, let this kid go run. Let this kid go kick a soccer ball or dance or just anything. He just needs to move. You know, get him out of he's not learning here. You know, and just put him somewhere. Or I see kids who are spending half the class drawing in their book. I say, you draw really well. Do you take any classes? You know, but they have to go do test prep or they have to do the cram school. And it's just, everyone needs to realize there are different forms of intelligence, but there are also different forms of success. You know, if you are a middle manager at a bank, you're viewed as a very successful person. My father-in-law, he runs a transportation business, you know, those blue trucks you see zipping around.
Yeah.
And probably salary-wise, you know, my father-in-law would make similar or even more money than someone working in mid-level management at a bank. But they're just not viewed the same. Or even the guy who fixes my scooter, Guowei, mm-hmm. He's got a small business. He's got a family. He's got employees. I'm sure he's doing fairly well. But, you know, no one turns to their kid and say, hey, listen, you're going to be a successful mechanic someday. Mm. Or like, oh, you know, it looks like you like taking things apart. You like putting them back together. Have you ever thought about like fixing cars for a living? I'm not a classist, but I do think about this intersection of economic and social class and how that affects how we view the world. I don't know if parents need to look at that, but I hope they kind of appreciate what makes their kids different and what might benefit their kids more than just learning English or, you know, learning extra math after school.
Yeah. What are some of the things or something that you have done in Taiwan or experienced here that you would recommend to other foreigners, other expats living in the city or listening to them?
Right. There are definitely a few good things you can do in Taiwan. As a, believe it or not, as an atheist, I love temples.
Yeah.
So, I have to go down to Tainan. Mm. You have to see all the temples in Tainan. You have to go see the Catholic Church. Yeah. That's made like an old Chinese temple.
Yeah.
Because it's just interesting. They're beautiful places, and it gives you an insight into people's lives and their spiritual longings and things like that. Otherwise, try to break into some interesting communities. Yeah. You know, maybe you see some of my posts. I make tiny robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're only about 7 or 8 storefronts in Taichung. There's probably a few more I don't know about. But, you know, you go there and they know you. Because you're the foreigner who goes there to buy robots. Or you know, there's plenty of things like that around here. Tiny shops that just sell one thing for some hobbyists. And those people are great. They love to share with you the hobby, but it's an inroad to their personal life. You know, my clerk, she says, oh, how are you doing? Okay, well, when my son's here, you got to talk to him. That's another thing sort of with learning Chinese, if you haven't. There are benefits to learning it. Probably not professional, right? You're probably not going to get a job if you become fluent in Chinese. That's not going to be the doorway. You know, frankly, you know, what are your skills? Oh, and now you speak Chinese. Well, okay, well, we can get someone from Singapore or,
right,
you know, Malaysia who grew up speaking English and Chinese. But what is opening or what is opened by learning Chinese is just this interesting world of human connections that you can make with people. Right. There's an app right now called TikTok. Yeah. It's kind of like Vine, but only for music.
Hmm.
And some of my videos are popular, and it's interesting just to talk with people, to use my Chinese and say, "Oh, you where are you from?" Or like, "Oh, you had a baby, you know, so how's your baby doing?" Just having that little bit of Chinese allows me to interact in this different way.
You really bring up a great point that no one else has brought up this far, but I think is worth dwelling on just a little bit, is this whole idea of, you know, opening up the culture. And I think for some people who live here, it's difficult because we don't speak the language, or somebody maybe doesn't speak the language. It's a difficult language. There's no doubt about it. You have to put in the time. But once you start to, you do find that the culture begins to crack open. What are some things that you've discovered culture-wise that you wouldn't have been able to know apart from learning Chinese?
I think one of the major things I've learned is from just different sharings with my father-in-law. You know, he's a bit of a stoic guy. He's got a few friends that he'll talk to, but I think he keeps his nose to his work. But every once in a while, he'll come over and he'll tell me something about Taiwanese culture, because he sort of knows my religious views. Mm-hmm. But you know, and I can never tell if he agrees or disagrees, or if maybe from his viewpoint, agreeing and disagreeing is not important. Maybe there's something more important than whether we look at it the same way.
Right.
So he's definitely shared with me things like, well, why do we shoot off fireworks before a wedding? And he's like, well, you want to let everyone know it's time to eat. Or things like that. Just why does everyone go to the temple in the neighborhood? And that's where you get to know the people in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if someone needs something, you know, you've all given to the temple, and that is sort of your doorway into the community. Mm-hmm. That you're also supposed to get back something from that. Mm-hmm. And that's in the neighborhood community, the spiritual fulfillment,
right.
And just the human connections.
Yeah, a good answer, yeah. Don't worry, I'll cut that little extra stuff out. All right, a little more deep question at this point. What if you had just a year left to live, for some reason you were to discover, hey, a year from today, it's over, and whatever comes after, you know, well, neither of us can, you know, we're going to leave that for another day. But you've got a year. How would it change the way you spend the next year? Or would it change the way you spend the next year?
Well, I'm glad we're getting serious. Yeah, I think it would change the way I live my life. It would have to. What I think, first of all, no more cheesy TV shows. Sorry, no more B flicks, you know, rewatching them for the third or fourth time.
Yeah.
Because I don't have time for that.
Hmm.
What would the pat answer be? You want to spend more time with the people you love. I think that is true. And I think I would have to get my affairs in order. I know that people in that situation might try to postpone it, you know.
Sure.
Maybe find what any means necessary. But from my own viewpoint, we already have a limited amount of time with the people we love.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 year or 5 years left, we can't waste it, right? And that can mean in several ways, right? You couldn't waste the time, but you also couldn't waste your family's money, right? If you're chasing around a miracle cure,
yeah,
right? You're gonna be gone, and you're the breadwinner, so you can't take that away from them as well.
Right.
You know, I can't necessarily say how much my actions, like what my specific actions would be.
Sure.
But that's just really how I have looked at this. I have thought about it. You know, what happens if I get some terminal disease? And I've just said, well, I'll pursue what medical options are well researched and well developed and have a good chance of curing me. And if when those run out, I just have to spend time being with my family and making sure you know they know how I felt about them and what I hope they go forward doing.
What is what's something that's happened to you since you've been here that you just is one of your favorite memories? Maybe like a crazy story, something that just you kind of, if people say, hey, tell us about your life in Taiwan, this is kind of the first thing that comes to your mind, like, oh, you wouldn't believe this, but this really happened to me.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily wacky or crazy or that kind of thing. But as far as an impact on my life, you know, I saw a flyer for a guy down in Sun Yat-sen University down in Kaohsiung, who was going to have his own humanism event at his college, and he said, we need sponsors, and I said, hey, okay, we got a couple $1,000 for you raised by our group, and you know, sent it off to him. He's like, oh, I can see your passion, and that was the guy who helped organize the humanism conference up in Taipei, and now he's running the group here in Taiwan, and he's taken over my position in in the International Humanist Organization. So it's not crazy, but just it has a very interesting.
It all just came from seeing a flyer.
It all just came from seeing a flyer that I made this connection with this guy, and then you know, we worked closely for a few years, and now he's doing bigger and better things than I ever thought I could do on an international stage. So I think the people of Taiwan really are treasure.
It's true. On the flip side, is there anything that still just gets under your skin here? Like just, you know, those little things that occur from time to time, maybe daily, I don't know. Just like you just go, oh, why?
A few things. I mentioned before we started to speak, I'm a magnet for people who maybe, I hesitate to use the word crazy, I'll just say maybe overly aggressive. they come up to me and hit me. There used to be a guy who walked around my school's neighborhood, and whenever he saw me, I had to go in the building and they had to lock the doors so that he couldn't see me while the parents were coming to pick up kids.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And I don't know what it is about me. He's not the only guy who's come up to...
Like, he would just hit you.
Right. He would hit... Like, one time I tried to just say, hey, bud, let's go. You don't have a shirt on. There are kids here.
Yeah.
Let's move along. And he just smacked me. And ever since then, if he saw me, he would come up to me. But the other... thing I think does continue to bother me, going back to the box making factory, is the mandates without consequence. In that, like in the classroom, hey guys, students can't bring food into the classroom. Or else what? Right?
Yeah.
Or else what? So if I see the food, I do what? Oh, you take it from them. Okay, and if they bring it next time, you take it from them again. Okay, well, can we just stop them from bringing food altogether? You know, or you know, what's the follow up? Is there any actual backbone to the mandate? And again, I think you just have to learn. Like, okay, well, that's one of those. I'll do what I can, and if I can't do it, then I'll just move on.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was actually, you know, one of the things that many of us complain about here is the traffic situation and the flagrant rule violations that occur daily, hour by hour, minute by minute and second by second. And all while we can all watch our local policemen just watch them happen, drive right by as they happen. And you wonder why there's no, seemingly no will of either the local populace or the government to actually enforce or enact changes. And there are laws. I mean, if you have a driver's license here, you know there are laws, but it just doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, my favorite one of those is the it's your fault honk. Where it's like, coming up to a red light, I've honked, it's your fault now.
Yes.
Right? I let you know. But you know what else really grinds my gears is outdoor advertising here. Mm. Is, you know, there's a social contract in advertising, right? Someone helps pay you for the podcast and you provide this service. So I'm trading my attention to the advertiser so that he can provide me the art or the public service.
Sure.
But in Taiwan, every square inch of anything can be covered with an advertisement. And it's just, it doesn't cease. You know, it's, hey, here's an open lot. Let's get some bamboo shoots and make it into a political ad. Or, you know, this person's not renting out a building right now. Mm-hmm. So he puts a vinyl ad on three sides of it.
Sensory overload.
It really is.
It is, yeah.
And every once in a while, you're driving down a road in Taichung and you see a mountain on a clear day. And you just think, man, what if someone had thought, let's keep this view, this beautiful view open. And well, how would that affect our city? How would that affect our daily lives?
Yeah, that's true. So I ask everybody this, and I know you know the question's coming, but I am curious. I'll ask it a little bit differently. Did you grow up religious? When did you make a decision for yourself to become a freethinker?
Okay.
Walk us through that.
Yeah. I grew up in the Lutheran Church in Minnesota. It's the ELCA, which is fairly mainline. There is another one called the WELS, Wells Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of Northern Baptists. You know, it's a Norwegian Baptist, you might say.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't in that church. It was the more mainline, mainstream one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned a lot there. A lot of great people. Still friends with them. My mother works in the church now. She's the office coordinator.
Yeah.
I used to call her, "Hey, I need a coordination on my office here. Can you help me?"
Yeah.
So I did think that benefited me being around those people.
Yeah.
I was very close with the pastor, as she was with my family. She officiated our wedding in the States, and her mother came as well. But when I went to college, I joined a group called the Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
Navigators.
Navigators.
Uh-huh. Which is the Crusaders Catholic, Navigators tend to be Protestant. And I think I got into it. Got really into it. I was reading the Bible every day. I was doing exegesis. I was taking it. I was, you know, I had a diary. I had a goal about how many books to get through in an amount of time, and I was taking it slow. You know, I wasn't brushing through. I was taking one chapter a day,
right?
And then I pray for and after. You know, let whatever messages in this book be made clear to me. Let me not read my own ideas into the book. But I think the thing about that is you almost become a submarine in that you're going deeper and deeper and deeper. And when you have that much pressure, if something happens, it just crumbles. And while there is an event I can point to that I could say is that crumbling, I don't want to necessarily give people the out that, poor you. You know, if that thing hadn't happened to you, you would still be in the church.
Sure.
Who knows? I really just think that started the chain of events where I started to think, well, man, all this stuff that I've been reading about and thinking about and people have been telling me feels really wrong right now.
Yeah.
And if this one thing is wrong, how much else of it could be wrong? And I, that started me on a path of inquiry and research and reading that I'm still on. You know, I'm still learning more. So I just couldn't. Well, I mean, if you were to ask me simply now, I would just say I no longer see enough evidence to accept the existence of a God. But yeah, it just, it was like a network degradation where you start to unplug nodes one at a time, and at the end of it, your network's gone. That was what happened to my belief.
Okay. Wow, thanks for sharing that story with me.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to be on, and it's been really delightful to get to know you better than we have before. And to all of you listening, if you see Wade around town, if you see him at a booth, go up and talk to him. I mean, this is a really nice guy, and I look forward to our future here in Taichung together, and I hope we can do good for this city. I think we do both share empathy and concern and compassion for the people here, and there's plenty of good to do here.
Of course, and may I say, Todd, I really appreciate the conversation. It's great that you're encouraging. You know, I love this. I love talking about anything, even these uncomfortable things. It's just nice to talk about something other than the weather.
Yeah.
As a Minnesotan, that's a perennial topic. but you know, it's great to see someone like you promoting conversation like this in Taichung, and I think it's going to be a great service. I think the city is going to be made better because of what you're doing, Todd.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I hope so. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Taichung Expat Talks. Join us for our next episode next week.